afternoon. It's Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, and the time is 2 o'clock. We're calling to order the Montgomery County Hospital District and Montgomery County Public Health District special meeting. So I'll start and make a few announcements, and then Doc and Chief will add to the announcements. Melissa will be here shortly. We've just received a piece of very impressive testing equipment that just came in, and she's working with the Phoenix Paravescent people to check out how the testing is going. Now, Melissa, why don't you sit here so you can be closer to the camera. And closer to the camera. So, we have been working very specifically on being able to get up and going with community testing over the last couple of weeks. And I'm happy to say that Melissa did a very exceptional job. She got the opportunity for a grant from Public Health, and she did an exceptional job on about a five-hour notice putting information to the group together for the grant so that we could receive grant funds to increase epidemiologists. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. And also to be able to do some community testing. After we got the money for community testing, we realized at that time we didn't have the appropriate testing supplies to be able to do it. So we thought instead of doing testing on our own, there are a couple of testing sites in the county, and our call center keeps up with the testing sites in the county. So we thought maybe it would be better if we worked with testing sites in the county, and we provided enough money to cover the cost of the kits for the most part, so that people in the county could get the testing for amounts that are free to them. The testing sites may still ask to file on their insurance, but when we're doing testing through the community centers, currently we're working with American VR and Lone Star Family Health Center. We're not ready to put this out yet. We probably will have our contracts and our process together and ready to go, hopefully the first part of next week. We're looking for additional sites that we can test. But the way the testing will work is when someone calls our call center, they're looking for a testing site, we can see if they're asymptomatic or symptomatic, and depending on that, we can refer them to whatever site they wish. If they're using the sites that we're partnering with, then we'll give the patient ID number, they can go to the sites that we're partnering with, and that'll be a $51 voucher. So that they'll have no out-of-pocket cost doing testing at either of those sites. We're looking to expand sites to Magnolia and East County. So I'll go real quickly through my list and then we'll go on. There was a question about tracing in public health. When we met corona-positive patients, we've announced the patients, and we've done follow-up tracing. But when we're announcing patients, we announce whether they're male or female. We give their age range, roughly within a 10-year range. And we also list what zip code or area of the county that they're from. The question has come up, what about ethnicity, race? We didn't start tracking that information initially because we had so much work coming in that our tracers were having a hard time keeping up with the problem. We do have access to that information, and we'll follow up when our tracing activity slows down, and we'll get that information so that we can put that back to the state. Anything you want to add?
So to be clear on that, we've captured the information. We're not doing the analysis on the ethnicity information, but the information has been captured and stored. And on the testing, I wanted to be clear that that was for molecular testing through the grant. It's not the finger stick blood quick one. It is the other type of testing, and the grant has not been received final approval, so we do not have the funds to do that yet. It is expected by the end of the week that we will have the funds, so we're working on the plan to be able to roll out next week for symptomatic testing through the public health department.
We're also looking, we've gotten some money from the CARES Act for the hospital district. So we're also looking at the possibility of being able to do some $50 per test testing for people who are asymptomatic through the hospital district grant. So as soon as we have that information together, I may be calling an emergency meeting. We'll discuss how the process would work and what the process would be for, and have the board make a decision whether we could spend those funds on access for asymptomatic people going through the testing site. We've been working today on our capital budgeting. We're getting to rolling that out. We're also going to be planning tomorrow for our new employee recruiting and process to take care of that, because with COVID-19 going on, we've been pretty focused on how we take care of the citizens and the community and our employees and our partners. And that's been an all-encompassing job. But we've got an organization to run, and so I think that Doc, the Chiefs, and Melissa have done a fantastic job of coordinating the organization, and so we're really focusing on how can we be cost-effective and plan for the future. We've mentioned in a couple of our talks about telehealth. We've set up telehealth through an app that we have been working on with various hospitals for the last couple of years. And the doctors that are working with patients who have decided not to go to the hospital, or they call our call center, they've been sick, but they really weren't ready to go to the hospital yet. So he's been working with telehealth, and he's had some really positive outcomes, and we'll let him talk about that as well. And for telehealth, not only is the doctor doing telehealth through an app, and but we also have a second squad that we put up. A couple of weeks ago, we put up a squad go take care of patients that weren't feeling well but weren't ready to go to the hospital and make sure that we were safe to be able to live in the home and that they were getting the care that they needed. The demand for that squad has been pretty exceptional. They've been running about 12 calls a day. So we put up a second squad this Saturday, and Chief Campbell will talk about that. We also made some changes to our phone bank. I think we were trying to be too helpful in the phone bank. When people call us with general information and wanted information about testing, we were trying to tell them, you know, which ones were free, which ones required that you be asymptomatic, which ones didn't, which ones used a swab, which ones used a blood test. And that information has been changing rapidly. Hours of operation at all, amount of equipment, PPE that places have left, it was moving faster than we could take care of. And so we were giving people information that was sometimes a day or two old, and I think we were really frustrated with what we were doing. So we changed what we're doing now. Now when you call the bank phone bank and you want to know about testing, we get information to see, are you symptomatic for COVID-19 or are you asymptomatic? If you are symptomatic, we will let you know all the testing sites that we're aware of that are testing symptomatic patients. And if you're asymptomatic, you'll be the same thing. Then we give you that or those testing sites' phone numbers, ask you to call the testing site and coordinate the information. I think that's probably going to be a much more active way to work with the community and not give them information that may no longer be valid. Okay, that's kind of the top of everything I've got. Mostly, you want to talk about anything else about testing?
We received the Abbott test kit from the state 2 days ago. Our crews have been going through our community paramedics, have been being competency on that test and doing the mandatory training, which they have completed. And about an hour after they completed it, we received a batch of the cartridges that are required to do the test. A box holds 24 cartridges. We received one box. Two of cartridges out of every box are used for the quality control testing. So we have the ability to test 22 clients with that first box we received. We have to be a test of a lab positive patient. So we're testing that person's swab right now in this kit to see if we get spike results. So we're running that test right now. It's a 10-minute test, so we're excited to see how that comes out. Public health continues on with doing their epidemiology investigations, also utilizing the fire inspectors to do those as assistants. So they're doing very well. I don't know what else
to say. Okay, you've got some additional epidemiologists to
We, through the new COAG COVID-2019 grant, we were able to have three additional positions added. Two of them we filled internally. We're made an offer to backfill one of those positions, and we'll be interviewing additional epidemiologists so that our staff will go from two epidemiologists to five as quickly as possible. We'll also be hiring an EPI assistant to be able to assist them with doing the analysis and collecting data off of that grant.
Sure. I've been extraordinarily happy with the results of our call center and some of the alternative dispositions that we've engaged in, not only for the field crews, but she put up the squads. I think the command staff has done a phenomenal job training all the new squads, putting them up. They've been very, very busy. I believe, Chief, they're our highest utilized asset in the service. And this morning we followed up 30 of those patients to do some ongoing quality with how the program was going. It's been phenomenally successful. It's well received by the patients. They're super happy with it. They were happy they didn't have to go to the emergency department. So to me, it is more evidence that we have always had the right idea. This is a system and not simply a transport system that offers health care. With these three components, we talked about the emergency triage, treatment, and transport. That was the Medicare model that we were selected for at MCHD, were engaged in. All we're doing is essentially taking that model, taking the pieces, some of them we had in place already, and we're accelerating that process. So alternative dispositions on minor illnesses or injuries, we're not taking those directly to the emergency department. We're using our clinical skills to assess those patients, to triage those patients to where they need to go most appropriately. And with that part is going very successful in conjunction with the 911 guys and the squad. The telehealth component with the call center, we follow some of those patients, not all of them, with a physician visit for myself or Dr. Patrick. Been well received. Those patients did quite well. I think are very, very pleased with the service. And then the last one is one we've always had, which is our community paramedics that really go out to some of our most difficult to manage social issues in the community, and they have those disparities in healthcare. So they have food insecurity or just insecurity in their lives or housing insecurity, and all those social determinants that kind of round out how our overall health is as a community. So we've kind of taken the pillar we had, our community paramedicine, and we have spun up the other two pillars, which I'm super proud to see how it's functioning. I'll pass over to the chief.
And I'll interrupt just for 1 second. And one other thing community paramedicine people have done, the food insecurity and housing insecurity, I think the thing that they're very, very good at is they're very good at working through the complex system of who's eligible for what kind of payment for health care. We have lots of people out here who are very chronic, but they may be eligible for Medicaid or Medicare or special programs, and the community paramedics have that experience and know how to shepherd through that. So that's been very, very helpful. A lot of people.
So a little bit of data also with the call center. In the last 33 days, the call center has received 4,477 inbound calls, an average of about 135 calls a day. We've been monitoring EMS call volumes closely, and one of the trends that we've seen really throughout the last 35 days is our transport volume has been low, and overall call responses have been low. But one of the lowest days we've had in a long time, 63 transports, as we talked about during last week's update. But with that, and talking with our crews and going through our quality process, there's people in the community who are afraid to go to the hospital because they think if they go to the hospital, they might contract the virus at the hospital. So our crews
and the hospitals are low.
And the hospital volumes are low. So we trend hospital volume every day as well, ICU beds, ventilators in use using the state registry, or really CENTRAC in our region's registry. So we're educating our crews on how to talk to the patients to make sure that they're really trying to get them to go to the hospital. If it's a life-threatening emergency, just as we always do, but it's a different kind of communication and compassion, saying we really urge you to go to the hospital. But with that, we are coming into contact with people who are at home longer and who are sicker. So low volumes to the hospital overall, but we're coming into contact with patients who may have an appendix that's been sitting for days and days festering, or their CHF has been unmanaged, so we're seeing some sicker patients. And then the last 48 hours, our call volume has been closer to normal. So yesterday, for example, we had 224 responses that resulted in about 125 transports. And that's about a normal NCHD Monday for us. So and some of those determinants have changed. So as people get out and about, we see some of our normal EMS-related calls, NVCs go up, things that you would expect to see as people are on the road. We're still doing our nightly call every night with the crews at 7 o'clock. We've been happy with that. It's a good way to communicate with everybody, keep the crews up to date, answer their questions. And one of the things we're working on in the planning side of ICS structure is the command system is we're trying to source reusable PPE. So we've implemented the reusable gowns across the entire district, which has been beneficial in a lot of ways, one of which it gives us a reusable PPE option now for the foreseeable future, but it also is comfortable for the crews. We're able to wash it in the station, and the crews have said they feel like they have an added layer of protection because of the gown material as opposed to kind of the plastic material that comes in the PPE kit. So they've been, if anything, morale booster having that. They feel comfortable wearing that. So now we're trying to find a reusable N95 option. That's some updates, EMS stuff.
Okay. So I think that's all that we've got. I did have a question from Brad. He said he had some questions regarding the criteria for considering someone recovered. Can you provide something that could be released? Well, do you want to talk about what our criteria is for releasing?
How we determine, we go by the clinical criteria for the CDC, their guidance. So if you're a known positive, i.e. you got sick, you were tested, you came up COVID positive, if you're at least 7 days from the onset of your illness, of your symptoms, and you have had 48 hours of no fevers without any anti-fever medications, along with an improvement, a subjective improvement in your clinical, how you feel, essentially, your clinical status, then you can return to work. If you're less than 14 days from the onset of your symptoms to returning to work, you need to wear a surgical mask, or if you have any respiratory symptoms. But those are the clinical criteria. I think those are probably more rational than the testing criteria. The testing criteria would say you have to have two negative tests at the end of your illness to go back to work. And why is that? I think there's not a heck of a lot of science behind it. I think it's a guess. And my guess is that if you're not running fever, you are not sick from the positive test, right? You're not having clinical symptoms, you're way less likely to be shedding active virus. Now, could you still have virus detected in your secretions for a couple of weeks after a clinical illness? Yes, you can. You can. How infective that is, what that risk is, I don't think anyone really knows. So those are the two criteria. We choose the latter. I think it's the most rational approach. I think they're both, neither one of them has a lot of science on which is there one that's better.
So
two negative tests. The second one is using a viral swab if you have two of those negative, after your illness, your symptoms are improving, you can return. You have to have two consecutive ones that are negative.
Otherwise, you can be
no fever for 48 hours without antipyretics or fever medicine, and you have to be at least 7 days from the beginning of your symptoms, and those symptoms have to be improved. That's the three stages of the clinical criteria.
Okay.
I would say that the other thing that kind of skews me more towards the clinical evaluation rather than the serial testing is let's just look at the discussions we've had in this group here about the accuracy of different clinical tests. There's just a lot that is not known. What is known and what is clear is that these tests can be falsely negative depending on the specimen. If it's the PCR test, it's very sample dependent. And I don't think that we, as a healthcare agency, can really rely on one piece of evidence. It's really the whole clinical picture. So it's the patient's history and their contacts and where they live. All these different things put together that gives us kind of our risk to their surrounding, the people that are surrounding them and their family, and potentially in their workplace, plus the testing. So I think it's always a combination of both.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Do you have any questions for me? Okay, anybody have any other comments before we end the meeting? So thank you very much for being online. We are going to end our meeting now. Our next scheduled meeting for the hospital district will be this coming Tuesday. The time is now 2:21, and we are adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you.